If you're visiting with us, let me explain that what we're doing this evening is something you may not have been a part of before. From time to time, we will preach a lesson in the morning, and then in the evening have a forum on that topic that allows people to make comments or ask questions about the subject that we discussed in the morning lesson. And that's what we're doing this evening. This morning, we talked about the subject of dancing and when dancing is wrong, when it's not pleasing to God. It's interesting, I thought, that the two songs that Charles led us in, the one he's going to lead us in at the end of the lesson. The first one here we just sang, "Oh, to be like thee, blessed Redeemer. This is my constant longing and prayer." Then we said, "Gladly I'll forfeit all of earth's treasure, Jesus, thy perfect likeness to wear." And then in the chorus we made reference to his purity. "Oh, to be like thee, blessed Redeemer, pure as thou art." When we sing that song, that is a great song to help us as we approach this very subject. When you approach the subject, is dancing wrong? How does that harmonize with being like Jesus in all of his purity? If there's a question about whether it's right or not, when you participate, could you sing this song, "Oh, to be like thee"? And then the song we're going to sing at the end, "Have thine own way, Lord." And so if he had his way with us, would we make the choice we make in any area of life, and particularly in the one we're discussing today? "Have thine own way, Lord." We pointed out in our morning lesson that the word dance itself does not describe an act that's necessarily sinful, but there are times when dancing is sinful. Dance just means to move around gaily. We presented six principles based on Scripture that you see before you on the chart as to whether or not dancing is right or wrong. One, when it transgresses God's moral barriers. Two, when it is in the setting of carousings and revelings. The Lord willing, we'll see more about that in just a little bit. When another soul is caused to sin, does it jeopardize someone else's spiritual welfare? When it's dishonorable in the sight of men, we'll talk more about that in just a moment again, based on the questions that were submitted. And when it violates one's conscience, and when it subjects to depraving alliances. We did have some questions that were submitted for our consideration this evening, and we're going to look at those now. Here's the first part of one question that was submitted. Is it possible for a Christian to dance without violating any of these six things we just looked at and discussed in our lesson this morning? For example, let's say you've been invited to a family reunion, and one night there is a dinner followed by a dance, and here are the specifics. And here's what the person who submitted this question, here are the specifics they talked about. Okay? Middle-aged couples, all married, no alcohol allowed, no scanty dressed couples, married couples dancing with each other, no dancing with others. Music is played. No other Christians are there. It does not violate the Christian attending assembly. And it's acceptable with the members who are attending. Is it wrong? I don't know how you'd answer that. You may be asked that question. How would you answer that? Is it wrong? Now, I just want to make some comments, and maybe you can add some more. If you as a Christian are in this setting, and so you take your wife and you dance with her, and your family members are watching who are not Christians according to this setting, what kind of message do you send about your views about dancing? Are they perceptive enough to know that only dancing under these circumstances is something you approve, or do they conclude that you really don't have any concerns about the rightness or wrongness of dancing? What would they conclude? What kind of message do you send? We pray, I think we did this morning, in fact, about being lights in the world. So if we participate in this action, does it in any way inhibit our ability to glorify our Father? Furthermore, again, I'm not a dancer, so I can't speak from experience. All I can base on is what I've seen and read about. But dancing can often be very intimate. The closeness of bodies, the touching that is involved in dancing, it's often a very sensual type exercise between two people. Here's a question. Are you comfortable with that kind of intimacy in public? Especially among people who aren't even Christians. There are other things a husband and wife could do that are lawful, but they wouldn't do it in a public setting because of the intimacy of it, because of the sensual but good way, maybe a good type sensuality between a husband and wife, but it's just of a private nature. That's a question at least I would have to raise. If you have children and they know you did this, and they will, what kind of message is sent to the children? Will they have the perception to understand that only this kind of settings are appropriate for dancing? The person who submitted the... Wait, one more thing. Let me just ask this question. Maybe it'll help. I don't know. Open your Bibles to 1 Corinthians 10. If you went to this kind of gathering, say you had an invitation. You're not a family member, but they think so much of you, they're going to invite you to their family reunion. And you walk in. And there on the dance floor is Wally dancing with Linda. And Eric dancing with Allison. And Craig is dancing with Jamie. Would you just say, oh, hi, how are you doing? Everything's lovely. Or would you raise a question about that? If you saw Rod and Luana and their children dancing, you saw me and my wife dancing, my children dancing, how would you feel about that? 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. Paul says, "What? Whether then you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God." Look back at the context, please. What's he talking about? He's talking about a very innocent practice. He's talking about eating meat. Meat that had been sacrificed to idols. And now was put for sale, maybe in the marketplace, or you're just invited to someone's house to eat. And it's that very meat that previously had been offered to an idol, but it's still good meat. Nothing wrong with the meat. This is not superstition, as if there's some kind of voodoo that's been placed on the meat. And so eating the meat in and of itself is not wrong. But he said two or three things. One, he said, back up in verse 19, what do I mean then, that a thing sacrificed to idols is anything, or that an idol is anything? But I say the things with the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice the demons and not to God, and I do not want you to become sharers in demons. So first of all, he says, you can't go sit down with the other idolaters and partake of that meat all the time saying in your heart, I don't believe in idols, I don't believe in idols, when in fact that setting is designed to honor idols. It would be like an infidel coming and partaking of this bread and fruit of the vine. It's total hypocrisy. But in a setting of partaking of this bread, this fruit of the vine, like we did tonight, they are declaring, I believe. So first of all, you can't go sit at the idol's table. But notice something else. He said, verse 27, if one of the unbelievers invites you and you want to go, eat anything that is set before you without asking questions for conscience sake. But if anyone says to you, this is meat sacrificed to idols, do not eat it. Is it all of a sudden something wrong with the meat? No. The setting is, he said, for the sake of the one who informed you and for conscience' sake. I mean not your own conscience, but the other man's. So here's a setting. The guy tells you, now this meat was offered to idols. What's he saying? Is he saying, now if you participate in this meat, it shows you have some willingness to participate in idol worship? Are you don't really stand up? Oh, there's something here. He says, under these circumstances, if he's going to make that an issue, it'd just be best for you not to eat it. And then, a little bit further, he says this in verse 31, whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. So the general principle is, and this applies to everything we do, is God going to be glorified? We just sang that song, and we're going to sing this one at the end. And so we said, oh, to be like thee. If we're trying to be like Jesus, would that help us with these kind of circumstances? And if Jesus has his own way with us, and there's this kind of setting, what would he want us to do? I'm not answering the question for you. You're going to have to answer it. Because it's a question, it's a good question. But you have to apply the principles that we've been talking about throughout our study this morning. Is there anyone who wished to add to this? Yes, Jeff?
Steve, something you didn't mention, I think.
Please speak up so everybody can hear you.
We're talking about family together.
That's right.
If you're going to have any influence as a Christian on that family, try to talk to them about Christ and live a Christian life, you've done something like this, you can guarantee that it's going to be thrown back at you. It's going to take your credibility away as far as trying to teach them.
And that may be true. Is that just? Have you done anything immoral? You haven't. But Jeff's got a good point. Will they then use that against you? Now, because they use it against you, doesn't necessarily mean you've done anything wrong, but that's a question you might want to raise. There are just times when you just say, it's just not worth it. Ennis, was that you that had your hand up? Did everybody hear Ennis back there? Okay. So here's something at least that would be in Ennis's mind about this. And then I saw, John, did you have your hand up? No? Mike. Please speak up, Mike. Okay, let me make one clarification. Note up there now, you don't dance with anybody but your wife.
Understand.
Okay.
You don't know what's going on in the mind of the other person.
You mean the people that are watching?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you don't know what you're doing that's affecting them through their eyes and through their imagination.
Okay.
So, good question. Am I my brother's keeper?
All right. Good question. I know what would be going on in their minds if it's me. They'd be falling down laughing at me trying to dance. But that's not true. People know how to dance. Okay? Good observation. Anyone else want to follow up on this one before we move to the next one? I know you wish I could answer these questions yes or no. I'm sorry. That's not those kind of questions. Not those kind of answers. And it's something that each person must wrestle with in their own heart. And I think, again, a good approach is like with these songs we sing. Oh, to be like Christ, have thine own way, Lord. All right, this afternoon I had a comment, not really a question, about something I said this morning. I commented, I made the point that sometimes people try to justify dancing by saying if we let our children go to school dances, we do that so that they'll not go to nightclubs and bars and dance. And someone was pointing out to me that, first of all, that doesn't work. They know it doesn't work. So that's number one, it doesn't work. And secondly, in fact, if you introduce your children to dancing, what if they really, really like it? Now what? Will they be tempted to want to go to the places where they can dance? I mean, dancing can be enjoyable, can't it? It's something that people can get to really, really like. So now, you let them go to the school dances, thoroughly enjoy it. Now they're 18, they're 20, they're away from home, they want to dance. Where are they going to go? Someone else, and I don't have it on the chart, but I thought it was an excellent comment relative to this very point. Wish I'd have put it up there, but I didn't. And that is, if parents can teach their children while they're at home to resist going to the school dances, to resist what's popular, to stand the heat of peer pressure, how will that help them now when they go to college? They'll already have learned some basic principles about not succumbing to peer pressure, about making a stand based on your own conviction. I thought that was an excellent point. And yet those lessons are taught back when the child's in the protective custody of a godly mother and father. Okay, anybody else have a follow-up comment on this before I move on? Yes, AJ?
You don't have to go very far to see dancing that would be provocative or could lead someone astray, because you could be in your own house and turn on these television shows like Dancing with the Stars, or even some video games are about dancing, and so you don't even have to leave your house to see this stuff, and it could affect somebody in their minds of what their thoughts are about that.
Good point.
So you don't even have to. You could be sitting in your living room and see this type of stuff.
So you're making the point that there's provocative dancing right there on the television.
Yes, sir.
Good point. And if it's provocative on the television, how much more provocative if you're there in person? And what if you're in a room full of 50 people and you're the only one not dancing? What then? Okay, so those were some good comments, I thought. Another comment that was made, we talked about excuses sometimes that are made to justify dancing, is that, well, they have chaperones. And we simply pointed out that chaperones can't control people's thoughts, and there's a question even about the morals of the chaperones. But one person who had firsthand experience with observing dances where there were chaperones told me that what chaperones do really is limit excess, where it just doesn't get way out of hand. They don't stop the handling of males and females. They don't, of course, obviously can't control the thoughts. They don't control the dress. I don't know about the kissing and that kind of thing, whether or not they control that or not. So in other words, when you talk about chaperones, that theirs is for the extreme. Their responsibility is just to stop the extreme. And so it wouldn't necessarily stop the things that we were talking about, these six things that we were talking about in our study this morning that we have biblical principles about. Any other comments about this? Yes?
Being a former high school teacher...
Please speak up, David.
I say, being a former high school teacher, a lot of these dances, the teachers are the chaperones. And you may have one teacher for every 50 students. So the ratios are so...
That's a good point David made. What if you got one chaperone for every 50 students? How much control is there anyway? Yes, Jim?
I know, just from what I've seen, probably, if you try to take that right away from one of those students, you might end up jailing them. You know, they've got their rights, and you know, they get some crazy target or something, you try to take that away from them, because that's their right, you may end up in jail.
That's very possible. Certainly true. Yes, Don?
The fact that they would need a chaperone should raise a bigger question.
I hadn't even thought about that. That's a good question. Why do you need a chaperone? What if we had a Coke drinking party? Do we need a chaperone? We all get together and share some Coca-Cola. Maybe if there were malts, we might drink too many malts. That's a good question, Don Ray. Why do you need a chaperone if everything's innocent? Good point. Yes, David?
This is pertaining mainly to teenagers, maybe not so much adults per se, but yeah, as a teenager, I'm not saying the teenagers here, as a teenager, you have this need to rebel. Okay, it can be at a dance, it can be at a school trip. I've taught students many a times in high school doing what they should have done, even at a field trip running off somewhere in the bushes. My point being is, when you have a group of students and you promote this type of behavior, chaperones or no chaperones, at least do nothing that's good.
They're not what?
It just doesn't lead to any good.
Okay. And remember, David taught, so this is something he's dealt with, and that's a good observation. You know, it kind of reminds me of, Don made the point why you need chaperones, and if it's so innocent. If liquor is so innocent, why do you keep having these commercials say, now, here's some whiskey, but you be sure and drink responsibly. Can you imagine a milk ad saying, now you drink responsibly. Why do you need that for? You know why. And Jim made mention of lawsuits. They're covering their back on lawsuits oftentimes because they know how many people get killed and maimed by drinking. And so, hey, we told people to drink responsibly. So, you know, the chaperone can say, now y'all be pure now and y'all be, up front with that. Yeah, right. Okay. I saw another hand back here. Yes, Betty? Okay. All right. Probably a good idea. I'll tell my daughter-in-law, she's not here. I got a 14-year-old grandson, and then Luke is, 12? And so they were invited over to some other boys' houses, and the understanding was the mom was going to be there. So she picked them and some other boys up, got to the house, said, I'm going to go ahead and meet the mother. Oh, she's not here? She said, really? My boys aren't staying, and you boys that rode with me aren't staying. I'm taking you back home. If your mother wants you to go, she can bring you. And it's the very principle you're talking about, Betty. It had anything to do with drinking or dancing. It's just, at that age, it's a good idea to have some adult supervision. And I thought that was a very wise thing to do. There was a hand over here somewhere. Yes, Sheila?
If you have chaperones, you need to have 100 if you have 100 kids. Because then all this provocative dancing or anything you're doing like that is over.
That's going to really fly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Chaperone says, okay, I'm going home with you. Yeah. Good point, Sheila. Okay, and we know, as so many times in dances, particularly prom dances, after the dance, what happens? So sad, so many young people, if they had their purity, lose it. Very, very sad. But, of course, they've been engaging in sexual foreplay the whole evening under the supervision of mothers and fathers and chaperones. And I do not understand, I confess, how a father who understands what all this is about can stand there and let his daughter be engaging in that kind of stuff, or vice versa, his son. Okay, here's another question that was asked this afternoon. Fully understanding the wrong of dancing, would you say it's okay if a husband and wife wanted to dance privately in their home? And when would they not dance in front of their children? Of course, I believe it's all right for a husband and wife to dance privately in their home and kiss in their home and do a lot of other things in their home by themselves. But how intimate conduct will you engage in your home before your children? It's sad that so many children are much too early introduced to things they ought not see or hear. So this is the question. How intimate do you want your children to see you and your wife or your husband behaving with one another? And if I were to dance before my children, and I don't believe it's wrong for a man to dance with his wife in his home, but if I had young children, what would be a serious responsibility of mine? To teach those children the distinction, what I'm doing, what's going on in the world. To teach them that. Would it not be as a father with the responsibility of training my children in the discipline of the Lord? To talk about these very principles we talked about. So can we do that? Could we open our Bible? Your boy, your girl says, well, what's wrong with dancing? What would you say? We say, it's just wrong. Is that what we would say? Or our church doesn't do that. God help us if that's the best we can do. Can we? Are we equipped to take our Bibles and show rational reasons, objective reasons, why at least some dancing, not all, some dancing is questionable? I saw a hand. David?
I was looking at the second question. When would they not dance in front of their children? I mean, I only have two little girls, but even at 2 years old, she fits up on so much. So I don't know the answer to that.
Good question. When would you not dance? And they're very perceptive, aren't they? It's a good point David brings up. Our children are very perceptive. And unfortunately, sometimes they're so much smarter than the parents. Parents don't realize what they're soaking up. They do. That's a good point. Any other comments before I move from this question? Whoever submitted the question or anybody else want to follow up on it? Okay. Here's another question that was submitted. Was square dancing the acceptable form of dancing in past years? I knew people that believed it was okay because there was no real touching and partners were always changing and was fast-paced. I don't know about square dancing. I realize it's a different kind of dancing. The little bit of square dancing I've seen, the interaction, maybe it's just me, okay? I wouldn't feel comfortable with my wife doing that with other men, but maybe that's just me. Maybe that's because of my culture. I don't know. The square dancing I've witnessed oftentimes, the women are wearing pretty short skirts. And sometimes it's older women who you wish they were wearing jeans or something. But what's your thoughts about square dancing? Could you at least, as you discuss it, take these six principles that we talked about this morning and apply that? Not all square dancing is the same, but it's a legitimate question. Please understand, if you're in this audience, I'm not against quote-unquote dancing. I'm against dancing that's wrong. When is dancing wrong? Yes, Tanner? Austin. Okay, change your name on me, but go ahead.
Well, it depends on the motive. If women are using this as an excuse to dress more scantily than they usually do to attract men, and if men are using this square dancing as an excuse to try and get closer to these women in an intimate fashion, then that's...
Well, that's a good observation.
Honestly wrong.
Austin talking about why are they doing it? Is it just dancing, or is it this opportunity for this man to be more involved with this woman that he'd like to be touching and more involved with? Good question. Or for a woman to dress in a way that she normally wouldn't dress that makes her feel more flirty, more sexually attractive or something. I don't know. That's good question. It has to do with the heart. So when it has to do with the heart, it's pretty hard to tie it down, isn't it? Kind of like pride. So many sins are, the cause is pride, but prove it. Good observation by Austin. Yes, David?
Back into the past, maybe they started accepting square dancing, and then once they accepted that, they precariously continued into other my problem with this is that you started setting square dancing. What's it going to be like for the next generation, and what's it going to be like for you?
I think that's a legitimate concern. I'm so thankful that as I grew up, my parents didn't do it. So it just wasn't even something I had to wrestle with. But I think David's got a good point. If the senses, if we're somewhat desensitized, even though the act itself is okay, what's the next step? What's the next generation? This happens in churches. And, maybe the church has a meal on the ground. Years ago, you used to do that, meal on the ground, because people came in wagons, they came from far off. I don't oppose that. But what's the next step? Oh, well, let's build a room for it. Wait a minute, I'm not opposed to people bringing their lunch and eating on the lot. If they have to travel 50 miles in a wagon, that's one thing. For the church to spend its funds and oversee the production of a fellowship hall to eat in, that's quite a different thing. But that didn't happen immediately. That was a gradation on something. Good observation, I think, David made. Yes, Jeff?
Jesse, there's other types of dancing, the square dancing, where it's fast-paced, older folks. Be careful, start condoning certain things. There's line dancing that younger folks do, country dancing that you're not maybe dancing with. It may be a line of girls or maybe a boy in there once in a while or whatever, maybe couples. But it's a dance where they're not close together. They're dancing in a straight line or whatever. So I think you have to be careful because, again, like Mike said earlier, you can't control the thoughts of the folks standing around watching or the person that's wrapped in arms with you. So I think we have to do that.
Good observation. You know, line dancing, somebody mentioned that to me today, and I don't know much about that. I understand it's just individuals all in a line, I guess, going through some kind of dance moves or something. And in and of itself, I suppose that's innocent. There is a problem like David and Jeff have talked about. Where will it lead to next? I don't know. Maybe nothing. But there's also the problem of what kind of acts are involved in that. Are they sensual? Are they designed to be provocative to those who watch? Sometimes those things get pretty provocative in the acts that are... You know, the woman that danced for Herod, she wasn't dancing with anybody, was she? And it cost John the Baptist his head. So a person can be dancing by themselves and be provocative. And so, again, I don't want to be your judge, but I think these are good observations that people are making. And let me just say this to all of us in this audience tonight. You've heard these good comments. Let's say you say, I don't agree with that. So you go dance. If these people that have commented tonight know you dance, what's going to happen to your reputation? Something to think about. Yes, Linda? That's a good observation. Oftentimes it's in those kind of places. Not always. You see, I'm so ignorant about dancing, I guess I saw line dancing, didn't know that's what it was. I went to Del Diamond here a couple weeks ago with Doug and Sandra, so they're partners in crime. But between one of the innings, some young people got up on the dugouts, and I guess, was that what they were doing?
It was chicken dance.
What? What kind of dancing?
Chicken.
No, not the chicken dance, Doug. Not that one. Where they were by themselves and touching their foot and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what it was. Yeah, I know what chicken dancing is. It's something else. But anyway, maybe that was line dancing. I don't know what that was. But anyway, it was innocent. But some of the moves were maybe a little questionable. But anyway, something to think about. Okay, Go ahead, sir.
You referenced this morning, the world sometimes uses the word revelry. Are you going to share that?
I'm doing that right now. Thank you, sir. First of all, we have a definition. Turn to 1 Peter 4:3, please. I talked about this verse this morning. He says in verse 3, the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. Now, the word we're focusing on is the one that's translated carousing in this version, and in some versions, revelings, and some versions, orgies. It's translated in different ways. I have on the slide before you a definition of that word that Peter wrote when he wrote that letter. First of all, from the VN, stands for Vine's Expository Dictionary of New Testament Words. He said a revel, carousal, the anyway. What? How do you pronounce it? I got it right here, and I can't even read my own deal. Anyway, it's something that's associated with. Got it? All right. The concomitant and consequence of drunkenness. And so what he's saying is it just kind of goes hand in hand. You can see that in the text, that oftentimes what he's talking about, these things kind of go together. Sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties. And oftentimes that was associated with their idolatrous activity. But let me ask you this. Let's suppose you say, well, there's no getting drunk, okay? I tell you, so does that make carousing okay? I tell you, out of this list, let's take off idolatry. Now, are the others, is drunkenness okay? If there's no idolatry? Are each one of these things sins, but sins in a similar category often went hand in hand in their society? We also have on the chart a definition from a fellow by Mr. McKnight. He's a man, I think, lived in the 1700s. Quite a knowledgeable fellow, but just his comment. Note, reveling, that is, feasting with lascivious songs accompanied with music. And then the TH stands for Thayer. You've heard Thayer referenced time and time again as to a preeminent Greek lexicon. And his definitions are similar to what we have, but then he has this statement. Used generally of feast and drinking parties that are protracted till late at night and indulge in revelry. Now, in the lesson this morning, when we talked about revelry and carousing, I made some reference to several specific things that looks like to me fall in this category. And you may say, that preacher's crazy. That's not that. Well, would you listen to the world, people who think it's okay? Okay, here's Mardi Gras. Now, I've got these websites on my notes if you want them. I can give them to you, or I can email them to you, but I've got the place where I got this off the web, if you're interested in that. Mardi Gras, revelry, parades, take over New Orleans. That's just one. You can just go do a search and type in revelry and Mardi Gras. You'll find all kind of, and these are current. This is not 50 years ago. This is the way news people would describe what's going on. Mardi Gras revelry. Another site talked about Mardi Gras revelry gets underway, is what it said. So here's Mardi Gras. Isn't it just a great fun time? Of course, you see people drinking, you see the dancing, you see the feasting till late at night. I think you probably are witnessing the very similar thing to what you read about in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 3. Now then, another thing that I mentioned in my morning lesson was the Christmas party, the Xmas parties. So here's a quote. The revelries of the work Christmas party and New Year celebrations. That's just one. Another one here is drunken Christmas revelries lead to arrest. You can go do your own research on this. So here are people who wouldn't do this any other time of the year, but it's a Christmas party. So you can dance and drink and stay up all night and engage in sensual activities because it's a party. It's a Christmas party or a New Year's celebration. Is that revelry? Is that what this word describes? And then the third thing I mentioned was about proms. And so I have on your chart here, mocktails, a safer option for prom night revelry. That's just one of the several places. Here's one that said, so come on out and be fun, even if you're still struggling from the previous night's prom revelries. Here's another one, dance floor shots that capture the fun and revelry of 2011 prom season. Just look at the newspaper. They describe it as revelry. And so people that go to the prom and let their children go to the prom, and then go tell that news person, I don't believe in revelry. Tell them that.
Steve, I assume a mocktail is what you referred to this morning, is something that looks like liquor, but it's genuine.
I guess that's what a mocktail is. The idea is to keep them from getting drunk, but they know, of course, the dangers of it, see? But still, the idea is this atmosphere that the world, at least, would describe as revelry. There was another point I made in the lesson this morning about one of those 6 points about does it involve us in entangling alliances? In other words, is it morally degenerating? I found a quote in Zondervan's Pictorial Dictionary. It said this under dancing. Primitive Christian churches allowed the dance, but it soon caused degeneracy and was banned, as is indicated by many of the Christian writers, unquote. Isn't it interesting that many churches today still encourage their people not to dance? Why? If it's innocent. They say, don't play ball. Do they say that? But don't want their people to dance. Is it because people who are observant and know something about history know the degenerating effects of this activity? Okay, any other comments? Yes, Ennis? Oh yeah, they wouldn't. A good point. In their mind, there's nothing wrong with calling it revelry. They're not saying don't do it, but they don't have the inhibitions of God's holy word to guide them. Rod, did I cover your point? You asked me about this. Okay. All right, get your song books, and we're going to sing the song that Charles has selected. Number 146. Have thine own way, Lord. Maybe that would be a good prayer when you're thinking, should I do this? Should I go there? To get on your knees and say, Lord, I'm wrestling with this. I want to be like you. I want to be pure as you are. Help me with this decision and have your own way in my life. Maybe that would help. Have thine own way, Lord. Mold me and make me after thy will, while I am waiting, yielded, and still. And when we think about what Christ has done for us, why would we want to do everything to honor Him and nothing to hurt Him, nothing to dishonor Him? He left the glories of heaven and came to the cross for you and me. He didn't have to. He arose victoriously to assure us that we too will see an end to the pain and misery of human existence and enjoy the glory of the place He's prepared. Why wouldn't we want to pray, have thine own way, Lord? If we can assist someone tonight in making the Lord of their life, either by confessing His name and being buried in baptism, or returning to an obedience to His will and a commitment to living like Christ, if we can assist you, won't you come as we stand and sing?